talks like an animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animals. Talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest on today's show is Bill Berlone, an animal behaviorist well-known, legendary, some would say, for his training of rescue animals for stage, film, and television. With a celebrated career spanning more than four decades, Berlone has been the subject of all manner of media coverage, including a major 2024 profile in The New Yorker, tied to his training of the Great Dane that starred in the film The Friend, alongside Bill Murray and Naomi Watts. Berlone and his wife live on a farm in central Connecticut, housing a veritable menagerie of some 20 dogs, and a smaller number of donkeys, cats, geese, plus, at least as of the New Yorker piece, a pig and a macaw, any of whom might appear in a play, film, or TV show Berlone is working on. There was a time, in fact, he had his own TV show, a reality series on Discovery entitled From Wags to Riches with Bill Berlone. Over the years, Berlone, the only animal trainer to have been honored with a Tony, has been saluted for finding homes for thousands of dogs. Not coincidentally, he's also participated in Broadway Barks, the venerable event featuring adoptable animals from New York City area rescue groups, along with Broadway's biggest names who use their star power to help the animals find homes. The 28th edition, hosted by Bernadette Peters and Andrew Rannells, took place on Saturday. We'll ask for his reflections on this latest Broadway Barks and hear some choice stories and observations from his storied 40-plus year career when I speak with Bill Berlone in just a moment here on Talking Animals on WMNF. Coming up later on today's program, I'll speak with Patrick Kelly, the general manager and one of the owners of Barks and Brews Tap House, a dog bar, dog park combo in Largo, spanning 7,000 square feet, indoors and out, where the canine contingent can run and meet and greet and play off-leash, while their humans can sample a huge selection of craft beers and wines and have some eats along the way. Launched by Kelly and two close friends, Barks and Brews offers a slew of weekly activities, including poker night and music bingo, as well as special events like bottomless mimosas and Barks Luau. We'll hear about some of those events and Barks and Brews Tap House more broadly when I speak with Patrick Kelly later in today's program. Right now, though, let's get into our conversation with Bill Berlone about his lifelong career training animals for roles in theater, film, and television, with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Bill Berlone to Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Bill.
Morning.
Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals.
Oh, my pleasure.
So I'm looking forward to discussing various aspects of your career, which I think the word storied absolutely fits in this case. And, of course, Saturday's Broadway Barks. But I'm hoping you could start with a story you may be dreadfully tired of telling. But can you tell us how you got launched as a teenage aspiring theater kid?
Oh, sure. Sort of an urban legend here in Connecticut. Because only child, was interested in theater. And when I graduated high school, there was a theater here in Connecticut called the Goodspeed Opera House, which is this amazing institution that's dedicated to the American musical, both its revivals and the introduction of new musicals like Man of La Mancha and Shenandoah. They had summer programs for interns to come and work 60 hours a week for no pay. And I applied after I graduated high school and got accepted. So my first summer away from home was at a professional theater building scenery, and it was the best time of my life. And they invited me back in the summer of 1976, and the new show for that year was the musical Annie. Its world premiere, and they realized in the script there was a dog, and they couldn't afford a New York dog trainer, and nobody that they had paid on staff would do it, so they needed someone silly enough or dumb enough to agree to train the dog. And I was called into the producer's office, and he offered me a part in one of the shows if I would find and train the dog for Annie. And of course, being an aspiring actor, I jumped at that chance. Didn't know how I was going to fulfill the other part of it, but someone said they had cheap dogs at the animal shelter. And I had grown up with dogs, but I had never been to an animal shelter. So when I went looking for a Sandy colored mutt to play the role of Sandy, I was profoundly moved. At 19, I had never seen dogs kept in those conditions. And I swore to myself, if I ever got a dog, I would adopt it. And I did. I found the original Sandy at the Connecticut Humane Society here in Connecticut the day before he was going to be put to sleep, trained him for the original premiere production. And then 6 months later, we opened on Broadway in 1977, and I became a world-famous animal trainer at the age of 20.
That's a great story, and among those that were figuring that story, at least the second production, were Mike Nichols, as I recall.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mike and his team were the ones who came and saw it and saw its potential and decided to bring it to Broadway.
That's great. It seems like much of the world of training animals to perform on stage or on film requires devising innovative techniques. While we're on this sort of era, can you discuss the baloney drop?
Oh, sure. Techniques. Let's talk about techniques.
Sure. I mean, please.
I had never trained a dog. I never read a training book. But as a child, I grew up on a farm, and I had a collie, cat, and rabbit. And there are pictures of me in the front yard with no fences and these animals and I playing together. So I must have figured out a way to want them to be in my presence and interact with me. So when I got the task to find Sandy, I'm like, how? I can't force him to do anything. This is live theater. How can I make it, though, so that he would want to be on stage, that he was comfortable, that he was safe? So it was the beginning. A simple thought became this positive reinforcement method of training when working with animals. Not how do you make them, but how do you devise a way that they want to.
Was that just instinct on your part? Do you think intuition, just because you had grown up on a farm, you had grown up with animals, and maybe you just had kind of a bent or a gift in that direction?
It was desperation. I didn't know what else to do. My only encounter had been the way I grew up.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember they could do repetitive behaviors because my mom, you know, would open the drawer for the can opener for dog food and my dog would come running every time when he heard that sound.
Yeah.
You know, so I knew they could take cues and do repetitive behaviors. So how could I translate that to a dog walking on stage? And what was unique was that no one ever told us you couldn't train a dog to do live theater 8 times a week, in which the story depended upon. The moves that the dog does furthers the story. And no one told me and the creators, Martin Charnin, Tom Meehan, and Charles Strauss, that we couldn't do it. So when the show opened, it was the first time an animal actually played a character in a live theatrical event. And so that's what sort of propelled my career, the ability to create animal characters as opposed to being a trainer per se.
Yeah, well, that was a question I was going to get to, is the idea of animals that are trained for theater, where you are doing eight performances typically a week, and what happens, or how is there an additional degree of difficulty for getting that animal prepared to do that 8 times a week and not wavering in a way that would affect the human actors in there, as opposed to, we'll get into maybe the contrast of training an animal for film or TV where there's a lot of repetition, but once they've gotten that film role shot, they're done, versus the ongoing run on theater.
Right. You know, and I started my career in theater. I think the first movie I did was a film called Neighbors with John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd.
Oh, wow.
And we provided a shepherd for it. And I was so nervous. It was like, because there were so many variables, but you only have to get it right once in a film.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
And they pay you a lot of money in film and television. Theater, you've got to do it 8 times a week in front of a live audience, and it's not as lucrative. But the interesting thing is theater is easier because dogs love patterns. And in a show, the lines never change, the blocking never changes. So for a dog to come to work every day and do the same thing and get the same treats, and they don't have to think, is much, much easier than bringing a dog to a chaotic movie set where everything is changing and moving, and you got to get them to focus in sometimes very crazy situations. So actually, the dogs like doing theater better than film.
Oh, wow. So it's easier for them to be consistent because that's just part of their natural tendency to, like, here's a pattern, here's where I get the treat, I'll see you tomorrow night at 8 the same way for more of the same.
Correct, yeah.
That's great. So what are some of the unique challenges, other than that, I guess, then, for working in TV and film? It sounds like you said, it's busy, it's chaotic, It's difficult, although lucrative, but there must be a different approach that you would use training, preparing an animal for a film role or a TV role than obviously than a theater role.
I'm going to tell you a funny story. When I started my career, and it's been 50 years, actually, this is my 50th anniversary since.
I thought it was 45 plus. Sorry to sell you short. Well, let's note that it's 50. That's great.
Right. And
starting to get the hang of it, I guess, right?
I know.
Yeah.
Back then, as to now, there are no laws protecting animals in theater or on movie sets. There are no unions that we can join that will help collective bargaining and negotiate our contracts. And so in theater, I had started with a good reputation. So people listened to me. And when I got into the film industry, animals are just props. They're hired through the prop department. And you don't get to talk to the director. You just have to show up and make it happen. And I thought it wasn't the proper way to do it. I mean, everybody else got to rehearse for the scene. Why can't the animal? So after like 5 or 6 years, I purposely stopped doing film and television because I felt it was a difficult situation. Fast forward like 40 years, and I get a call from a producer who's doing a series called The Leftovers for HBO. And she heard, you know, I was a pretty good trainer in New York and asked if I wanted to work on the series. And I said, no, thank you. And she said, well, I read about you in the New York Times. Why don't you want to work with me? I said, do you really want to know? And I told her how I felt it was almost cruel and it doesn't work. And she said, well, if I can help you, would you do it? And I said, well, sure. So the first shot was seven dogs running down the street by the main character and attack a deer. And it was a pack of Chihuahuas to up to German Shepherds. Everybody thought it was going to be take all night. I set it up and we got it on the first take. And everybody applauded. They were like, you know, it was like, to me, we just did what we do. And I said to the director, you want to do it again? And he said, can you do it again? And I said, well, sure. And all of a sudden, the New York film industry went, there's this old Italian guy who can get shots on the first take. and now I'm in great demand. The difference being, I'm not part of the prop department. I talk directly to the producers. I talk directly to the directors, as any other department would, so that I get all the information. They get the information. But that's just because of my, again, longevity. But it's still a difficult industry. And, you know, maybe someday when I retire, I will work to help create some rules for the industry. But yeah. And the reason why I can get it done on the first take is, like, in theater, there's no second takes. So my approach to training is, well, how do we get the animal to do it? You know? And so, as opposed to forcing an animal to do it again. I'm blessed to be, have more film and TV work than I could do right now, but it's changing the way, at least people are looking at the way animals are working here in New York.
And I would think that one of the things you said earlier, that there's no sort of guidance or regulations or whatever, but what about the people that we all know from reading if we watch the credits at the end, no animals were harmed? How does that figure into this work and there being no particular standards? It would seem like there would be for it to merit that kind of credit, that criteria, and somebody, I assume, is watching the production to give it that kind of acknowledgement.
Yes. I want to say back when in the movies where they were using trip wires to make horses fall down and, you know, having them fall off cliffs, a group of people got together and said animals have to be treated better. And they created the American Humane Association, which is a watchdog group. They're an independent agency that comes in and gives you their guidelines are great, and there's hundreds of pages of them, and they make sure that you follow those guidelines, enable to get that label at the end, no animals were harmed. And they are my best ally. They're my best friends. But ultimately, they're just a third-party witness, and they signed an NDA. So if a production does something or doesn't follow their rules, oh well, we don't get the SEAL. Unfortunately, they're not able to tell authorities if an animal's been hurt because they've signed a non-disclosure agreement.
So it's totally toothless in that way with the NDA. Then they couldn't really say, "Oh my God, there's huge problems on this set, and we got to do something."
No.
Wow.
In fact, nobody's supposed to. I mean, the cases that you hear are whistleblowers who are taking a huge risk to, you know, report something about a big studio production. So again, awareness, talking to you today is helping our cause. And again, I just want more people, if they come to see my shows, they see a movie and they think an animal doesn't look happy, say something, write something, write the studio, you know, and hopefully raise some awareness about it.
Is that the only way that with even over time, some measures will be put in place that surprisingly don't exist? Or again, even if they kind of exist, the NDA is creating a sort of an end run around anything action people could take.
Yeah, which is why for years, you know, inappropriate behavior, you know, was allowed. Because if you reported it to the police, then you've reached your NDA and non-disclosure agreement, and you could get in trouble for reporting something that's happened on a private set.
And I assume if you don't sign the NDA, you don't get the gig.
Exactly.
Wow.
So, again, talking about this and raising awareness is the best way to solicit change.
Yeah. Well, let me know, folks. Now, this is Talking Animals on WNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guest is Bill Bertoloni, renowned for his 50-some-odd years, it turns out, of training animals for stage, film, and television. He's also long participated in Broadway Barks, a huge adoption event featuring animals from New York City area rescue groups, along with Broadway's biggest names. The 28th edition of Broadway Barks, hosted by Bernadette Peters and Andy Reynolds, took place just this last Saturday, July 11th. So we'll get into that in a little bit as well. But if you'd like to ask Bill a question or offer a comment about training animals for stage, film, TV, commercials, presumably, et cetera, please call 813-239-9663. Email dj at wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. So something just popped into my head when you talked about how much better and easier it is for the animals that are doing stage performance, even though they're doing 8 shows a week, and they love it because it's a pattern and they get their treats when they know exactly when they're coming. But you often hear or read about top-tier theater actors discussing doing things differently with their role from performance to performance, sort of exploring different ways to get there or a different nuance to what's behind a given scene or whatever. So to what extent can the exploration of a role like that, especially if they're doing it with another top-tier actor and they're really, you know, letting things go in the interest of finding something maybe more revelatory or stimulating or exhilarating, to what extent can that exploration kind of mess with the animal? Because maybe suddenly the humans are doing something that they haven't been doing the last few nights by way of that exploration.
They can't change a thing.
Okay.
With their animal acting partner. First off, we create a relationship. In a theater, you know, we create a bond. We teach them how to be trainers. And the dog loves the people that are working with. And again, you set that pattern with a stimulus and a response. You know, the way you say a line is the stimulus. And if you change the way you say the line, the dog doesn't get the cue and doesn't do the behavior. So, you know, in the rehearsal period, we work out all those kinks in which the dog track or the cat track or whatever animal we're training remains the same. I just had the pleasure of working with Adrian Brody, 2-time Academy Award winner in a play called Fear of 13. And at the end of the play, a dog comes out to him in his last soliloquy. And, you know, we worked 4 weeks to find the pattern that worked for Adrian and the play. And then once we did it, the dog was perfect. The dog was perfect every show for 6 months. And Adrian at first was like, well, what if the dog makes a mistake? I'm like, if you do it right, he's not going to make a mistake. And he actually loved the fact that one of his actors on stage didn't change things. The dog, whose name was Gus, did it right every night.
That's great. And so was Gus cast like based on previous acting roles he had done on the stage?
Actually, they needed a big old mutt. you know, a stray, a dog that looked like a stray. And he's currently a dog that we have for a new musical based on the book Because of Winn-Dixie. So a big, yeah. But I said, we don't have time to teach a dog from the shelter how to be in the play in 8 weeks. You have to use one of my already trained, seasoned theater dogs. And so we brought in three or four of them, and they like one of these dogs for better than others. So so the rehearsal period was just like designing what we would do with Adrian so that it would fulfill what he was trying to tell the story.
That's great. Let's take a caller. We think we have a caller here interested in getting involved in the conversation. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Bill Verlone.
Hey. Yeah, I was curious about understudies. You know, eight shows a week, dog gets hurt or sick or something. What do you do for the understudy? And great show. Also, I was wondering if he has any, if he has a book, because I'd love to read it.
He does indeed have a book. You're asking all the right questions, including the one about understudies, which I was going to get to later, but that's a great question, so we'll get to it now. Thanks for your call.
I'm a fellow host on the Down and Dirty on Fridays. Take care.
Oh, great. Okay, cool. Thanks for calling.
You know, when I trained the original Sandy in the original production, I had adopted him for the show. And when the show moved to Broadway, the producer turns to me and he goes, well, what about the understudy? And I said, well, I'll work with the understudy child, obviously. He said, no, understudy dog. And it dawned on me, yeah, if Sandy got sick, I wasn't putting on a dog suit and doing the play. So every theatrical event has an animal backup. And the way we prepare them is that, you know, weekly there are rehearsals with the understudy actors on stage for them to learn their roles. So we teach the dog the show in those rehearsals. And then if it ever has to go on, we up the treats, you know, for the dog to do that performance. We have two Totos, two Sandys, you know, two bruisers from Legally Blonde. Everybody needs an understudy. And I do have a book. It's an autobiography. It's called Broadway Tales, The Untold Story of Animals on Broadway. And every chapter is one of my Broadway shows and the rescue story of the animals that were used in it and the happy endings that came from them. And so, I'm up to 36 chapters. This is the third edition because they keep doing more shows and they keep wanting more chapters. So Broadway Tale.
Yeah, I guess it would just keep expanding that way and keep going. It sounds like 50 years in, you have no intention of slowing down or handing this baton off to anybody else.
No, I am so blessed and so grateful to be one of those people who found something that I loved to do, you know, as a career, and then have been able to do it. So it's not work, it's art, it's animal rescue, because every dog we've ever trained has been rescued from an animal shelter. The day I met that first Sandy, I made a promise to myself, if I ever got a dog growing up, I would adopt it. So that's why currently there are 25 dogs sleeping in my house right now while we're doing this interview. All canine actors who, you know, we adopted and now have a forever home here on our farm in Connecticut.
And there's plenty of others I gather over the years that have found homes elsewhere that have been part of one production or another that you've overseen?
You would think that, but no. In addition to my advocacy for raising awareness, like Broadway Barks, I've been part of it from the very beginning, 28 years ago, and helping other shelters. I'm the director of animal behavior for the Humane Society of New York in New York City. You know, and as an animal officer, we say, you know, if you're going to adopt a dog, it's a forever home. You can't just have it for a while and then at the end of COVID, give it up because you have to go back to work. So I live that same, that's the way we live. It's like, we've adopted you, and whether you're a star or not, you know, you're now part of our family and you're welcome to live here. I would say over 40 years, maybe four or five dogs didn't like living on a farm, you know, with a bunch of other dogs. They were clearly more interested in that one-on-one relationship, which they had in the show. But when the show closed, they would come home and be part of our group. And so we would rehome them, but it's not as if we use them, the show closes, they go, okay, see you later.
Conversely, if there's somebody that came and saw Adrian Brody and Gus, and let's say Gus wasn't necessarily already living at your house, could they say, hey, is there any way to adopt Gus if they were a legit animal person with some kind of verifiable track record living with and adopting animals?
At that point, and again, that's an interesting question. Why would I give up a dog I love?
Maybe Gus wasn't a good example. I was just thinking of an animal that somebody saw on one of your shows that may or may not have been necessarily living with you already. I know sometimes you have to find, because a dog has to be a certain kind of dog or have a certain look. So sometimes you have to kind of search for those and find those. So let's say one of those ended up in a show that hadn't already lived with you beforehand. Would they be available for adoption if under the right circumstances?
I would imagine. And I'll this is what I tell people. This is why I love doing interviews like this. The 50th anniversary revival of Annie at the Goodspeed Opera House, where we started, will be opening in October. And I chose to find a brand new dog for that production. I already have three Sand that are already trained. But I wanted, I had an opportunity to give a dog a good home. And I introduced it to the theater yesterday. And he's a great little dog named Scotty. He came from a shelter down in Florida. And,
well, whereabouts in Florida, since that's where I'm talking to you from?
Port St. Charles.
Okay.
Animal shelter. But he was, and I hadn't trained him. I mean, he's brand new, and he's the sweetest dog. He's friendly. And everybody's like, oh, he's great, he's great. And I'm like, you could have adopted this dog. I haven't even trained him yet, but anybody could have adopted that wonderful dog and had this dog in their home.
Yeah.
So when someone says, you know, I'd love to adopt your dog, I'm like, there are others just as good in the shelters, may not be as theater savvy, but will make great pets. So that's why I've been doing these interviews all these years, to be able to say that, Duncan.
Yeah, no, that's great. Because I know a lot of people probably think that dogs that work in TV or film or, again, in stage as well, might be a certain breed. It might be bred, like the trainer might be looking with amongst breeders to find a certain dog. And it sounds like you're decidedly taking the opposite approach.
Yeah, I mean, we in legally in The Wizard of Oz, which is my favorite show to do because I grew up on The Wizard of Oz every Thanksgiving. Toto is a Karen Terrier. You know how many Karen Terriers need homes in the United States? So it's very easy to find a good dog that needs a home and then, you know, become part of our group. Legally Blonde was turned into a musical, and that has a Chihuahua character and a English Bulldog character. Again, unfortunately, very easy to find both of those type of dogs in shelters. So why would we breed them, you know, to have a supply when there's already supply? And here's the other interesting thing. I'm very proud of the reality show we did, From Wags to Riches with Bill Berlone, because Discovery came to me and said, we've heard about you and we'd like to do a reality show at your home and your work. And I'm like, sure, because we have nothing to hide. Having animals come to our house, which is technically our facility, it's a specially designed house. We all live together. The dogs live with us in the house. And to be
so there's 25 dogs hanging out in your house at any given moment.
Yeah. If I rang the doorbell, you'd hear them. But they're okay. They're having a siesta right now.
Want to disturb them. Yeah.
But have you ever seen the inside of an animal training facility that trains for movies and TV? Did you see where Lassie lived? Did you see where Benji lived? Probably not, because it may not have been conditions in which they wanted to share.
Yeah.
Whereas it's like, you can Google me and, you know, you probably could find where I live. But we had nothing to hide. So, of course, if you want to come see 25 dogs, a bird, a pig, llamas, donkeys. So that's what I took the most pride in about that. We were probably the first to ever show how it's done from the ground up.
And back to like the first couple of Annies. I think we sort of touched on this a little bit, but I just want to clarify, because it sounds like you grew up in such a way and your personality and temperament were such that as you moved forward after the first couple of Annies and you say, hey, I'm going to keep doing this, or I'm going to be asked to keep doing this, so I may have found what I'm going to do for a living for the next, you know, 5 decades or so.
Yeah.
So was it just automatic and intuitive that it would be positive reinforcement that you treat the animals well? There was never any thought probably of doing anything other than that, just because of, again, your background and your inclination and just the way you grew up?
Oh, no. I mean, Annie opened on Broadway and I thought, oh, great. I'm in New York now. I could study with the best teachers and hone my acting career. So I was doing that as Annie opened. Then Annie did four, not just one, but four national companies. And so the director asked if I would train the dogs again. So he helped facilitate how I learned to train dogs, because we were doing the same show over and over. But then I got asked to do a revival of Camelot with Richard Burton reviving his role. And as a actor, it's like you want to be in the room with Richard Burton in any way, shape, or form. So I agreed to do that. And then I did another show with a very famous actress named Eva LaGallien and Kate Burton. And I realized at that point, as I looked around the talent that I had been working with, I was never going to be that good as an actor, singer, or dancer. So I might as well stick with this dog thing. And because it was fun. So it took me like 8 years before I realized this would be my lifelong career.
Yeah. Well, it's worked out pretty well.
It has.
Yeah. That's great. Let's talk. I kind of skirted around and I meant to come back to more fully. Can you talk for a moment or two about Broadway Barks, like how it works and typically how many dogs, it might vary from year to year, but how many dogs typically end up adopted through Broadway Barks?
Yes. So, you know, many actors use their celebrity to help raise awareness for causes. And, you know, they're in New York, whether it's cancer research or any other research, or homeless children or animals, celebrities will loan their image to help promote that. And Mary Tyler Moore and Bernadette Peters were both avid dog lovers, and there's like 20 shelters in New York, and they were doing like all these interviews, and they turned to each other and said, why don't we do something and invite all the shelters to one place at one time and then allow them to get all the publicity they want? And that was the beginning of Broadway Barks 28 years ago. And so at the first one, because I work with the Humane Society of New York, what happens is, if the country doesn't know, if you ever get to New York in July, next to Times Square is an open area called Schubert Alley. And what happens is they put up a stage, and every cast from every show running, play or musical, is invited to introduce dogs that are up for adoption on stage. So surrounding Schubert Alley are booths, tents, with 20 or so different animal shelters. And, you know, and as the afternoon goes through, you know, people from Hamilton will bring up dogs for adoption. People from Schmigadoon will bring up dogs for adoption. And people are able to fill out applications and get more information and really one-on-one with animal agencies in the New York City area. And so the first year I was helping the dogs for the Humane Society, and I'd been around 20 years, and I was walking up to the stage, and Bernadette Peters turns to me and she yells, you're Bill Berlone. And I went, am I in trouble? She goes, no, you should be up here as one of our celebrities helping us. So that's
how that's really nice. Wow.
My relationship started. And then 5 years later, she did Gypsy on Broadway, and she insisted that I be the trainer for the dog and the lambs. So we have been friends in helping raise awareness for the plight of homeless animals. And Broadway Barks is an annual event unlike anything else that I've ever seen, because it's celebrity driven and it's one-on-one with all the people who are working on Broadway.
And how many dogs in a given Broadway Barks end up adopted that day?
You know what? I don't know. A good number do.
Yeah.
And the thing about adoption, if we're going to talk about it, is you may think you want a Great Dane, you know, but if you go to a shelter and you say, I want that Great Dane, they're going to go, well, do you have exercise? Do you have room? You know, so the chances of meeting the dog of your dreams may take a moment or two. They may be at Broadway Barks, or if you like an organization, you can put in an application for what you're looking for. But a really good number get adopted. Like she goes on, she does the press tour before, and it's very successful. You know, I don't even watch the movies and TV shows I do. I'm just always moving forward.
Too busy probably to watch.
Yeah, it's right? You know, I know it's great. I know they get a lot of dogs adopted and cats. Now they've included cats over the last couple of years. So, but yeah, it's more about raising awareness and people meeting these shelters and learning that they're not the awful places. You know, people say to me, oh, I don't want to go to a shelter. It's so depressing. It's like, no, it's not, you know, and not every dog is damaged. The great majority of them are there because of some unfortunate reason. Someone has died. Someone can't afford it. Someone's moving and there's nothing wrong with their behavior. So, amazing, amazing event. And now they've done it in England and Italy.
Oh, really? Reproduce yes. Broadway Barks?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
That's great.
I think it's called the West End Barks. And I can't remember what it was in Italy. But again, the theater community is very close-knit, caring community, and often rally for many different causes. But this one is a heartwarming one.
For sure. No, that's great. And I imagine those numbers are pretty sizable. I'm going to try to see if I can find out, because I just think from everything you said, it just seems like there would be a lot of animals that would find homes that day.
I mean, I would, if I had to venture a guess, there would probably be 100 animals for adoption.
Yeah.
Just from walking through, you know, and how many of them get adopted, again, is less important, I think, than getting to know the groups. And finding that right match.
Right, because even if somebody doesn't get adopted that day, 3 days later they may go back to that particular one that they kind of clicked with at that booth and say, well, I'm here to get a different dog.
Yeah, and you know, the animals they bring are the dogs that they feel can hang out with in a crowd of hundreds of people and go up on stage with people they don't know.
Yeah.
And so they're very well-rounded dogs. They're obviously good temperaments, all that sort of stuff. So,
that's great.
Wonderful, wonderful event.
For sure. Well, again, this is Talking Animals on WNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. I'm speaking with Bill Berlone, renowned for his decades training animals for stage, film, and television. We just finished sort of talking about Broadway Barks, a huge animal adoption event, features some of Broadway's biggest names. And we're just in our final moments. You're invited to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. So
I'm going to throw something out at you.
Okay.
That's going to get me in trouble. Hearing stories in our industry of animals who are not treated well, and there are no laws coming down the pike and no real way to help them. I never wanted to be an animal trainer. I just treated animals nicely and they performed things. So recently someone asked me, you know, how do I feel about AI coming in and taking all my work away? And
yeah, I was going to get to AI. Yeah, for sure. And
I would be very happy.
Oh, really?
Absolutely. Because if we can't protect them, you know, in those situations behind closed doors and NDAs, well, then let's not use them. Not use them. If we have the technology to replace them, please, let's do it. It's not like it's a big industry. How many trainers do this work in this country? 20, 30? But, you know, especially with the exotic animals, you know, those should never be on a movie set, you know, unless it's a very special, you know, thing. So, I am hoping someday as AI and computer generation get even better, we could start replacing some of those animals that, you know, come into a set and, you know, maybe too stressed.
Well, that's really interesting, because effectively you're sort of saying I'm trying to talk myself out of a job. So,
but you could take care of animals in a shelter with me. Come on, come up to the Humane Society of New York. We'll walk dogs together.
There you go. And as far as some of the exotics, I noticed in your the website for your agency is theatricalanimals.com. And I noticed I'm looking around, it says you guys do not handle big cats, bears, or primates. So I thought that was an important distinction.
And basically, the only thing I've ever done are domesticated animals. Anything you could find on a farm or in a pet shop, you know, because again, they've been sort of genetically engineered to have some relationship with man. Because if you take a wild animal, their instincts are so driven for self-preservation. There's no way to, like, Mr. Lion, do you want a cookie? I mean, you know, it's like, so I knew that. Growing up, you know, I could train cats and dogs. I couldn't train the squirrels. So that's always been my particular thing.
That's great. Well, that might be the perfect note on which to end this conversation. We've been speaking again with Bill Berlone, and 50 years of animal training, and again, doing all the right things and skirting all the wrong things, and just kind of disturbing to know how much stuff happens behind the scenes with people blocked from doing the right thing with NDAs floating and stuff. But that's, I guess, another virtue of an interview like this, is you have to learn some hard truths as well as meet some great people. So thank you so much for joining us today on Talking Animals, and keep up the great work. It doesn't look like you're going to stop anytime soon that I can tell.
No, thank you, Duncan. And again, do this next year for Broadway Barks 29.
Okay. We'll get to it beforehand and kind of spread the word beforehand. which I tried to do, got there a little bit late. All right, Bill, thanks again and good luck. And say hi to all 25 dogs there for me.
I will. Thank you.
Thank you. You know, when I'll speak with Patrick Kelly, one of the owners of Barks and Brews Tap House, the dog bar, dog park combo and lager that offers plenty of action the canines and their humans can enjoy, including weekly and special events. More on Barks and Brews Tap House when Patrick Kelly joins in a moment on Talking Animals on WMNF. Right now, we're going to step into the comedy corner, which of course involves animal-oriented comedy. This one's from Robert Mack, and it's called National Zoo here on Talking Animals. On WMNF.
I live now, moved from Arizona. I live in Washington, D.C. You might not know this. People around the country pay taxes so that people around Washington, D.C. can attend world-class museums and other cultural venues free of charge. So thanks for that. That's great. I went to the National Zoo hoping to see some national animals, you know, like a pigeon or sewer rat. But everybody there is lined up to see what? Panda, yeah, which is not a national animal. It's an immigrant, and it's stealing jobs from American animals. What's black and white and red all over? Communist panda from China. They deported one a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if you remember. He lost his green card or thought it was a bamboo leaf and ate it, and then they sent him home. Bye-bye, Bao Bao. There's one American bison at the National Zoo and a whole herd of foreign-born elephants. You know why? They're cheaper. They pay them peanuts. Listen. Maybe I'm old fascist, but I think the National Zoo should be kept pure with national animals, and then we can build a separate yet equal international zoo for all of those guys, right? Canadian geese and German shepherd, Spanish fly. Polar bears are extincting, did you know that?
That was Robert Mack in today's Comedy Corner. WNF with a piece called National Zoo, taken from his album No More Robert Mack. The no in this case is spelled K-N-O-W, by the way. Now it's time to speak with Patrick Kelly, one of three owners of Barks and Brews Tap House in Largo, which I thought we should learn a bit more about. So let's welcome Patrick Kelly to Talking Animals on WNF. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning, Duncan. Thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals. And so let's jump right in. What prompted you and your friends to create a dog park with a bar combo?
Yeah, it's something funny. You know, you always talk to your buddy and you all have this dream when you're having some beers one night that, hey, we should open a bar someday. And then when we ran across a couple other bars that were dog bars, we decided, hey, that looks like something cool and new, and let's see if we can put one in Largo.
Well, that's great. So was there, how much consideration was there of some other bar or some other business before you jumped right into what became Barks and Brews?
Yeah, well, I mean, I was teaching middle school at the time. So I spent 15 years teaching public school, and one of my partners actually still teaches. And it was just, I don't know, I had some experience running some businesses for my family, being entrepreneurial, and I was looking for something else to do. I love dogs, I love beer, and so do both of my partners, and we thought it was just a really cool, fun idea. And so we started working on it. I think it was about a year and a half, and we finally found a good location, and yeah. And
that's great. So when did you open?
We opened in November of 2024. So
okay.
Just over a year and a half.
Nice. What should visitors to Barks and Brews Tap House, both dog visitors and human visitors, what should they know or what should they do before they come check you guys out and say hello?
Yeah, the first thing is, if always, humans are welcome even without dogs. That's one misconception that's out there. You don't have to bring a dog to come hang out at Barks and Brews. We're having fun anyway. But if you are planning to bring a dog, we do need a copy of the shot records for your dog with updated rabies, distemper, and Bordetella, which is the kennel cough vaccine. So all our dogs, we know they're up to date on all those vaccines. It's just a protection for all the dogs. It gives all the human owners peace of mind that they know all the other dogs are vaccinated as well. But that's the biggest thing, is making sure that you bring your updated vaccine records. Or you can get on our app. If you look up Barks and Brews.
Yeah, I was just about to say there's an app for that, as the saying goes.
That's right. There is an app for that. Actually, that's the easiest way to get registered. If you do it in person, it takes a little while, but you can do it on our app. You look up Barks and Brews in your app store. You just take a picture of your vaccine records and upload that, and then you're good to go. And come hang out and have fun.
That sounds great. So speaking of fun, tell me about some ongoing weekly activities that are offered there at Barks and Brews.
Yeah, one thing we realized is the dogs, they're playing in the yard. They're going to have fun. So how do we make it fun for the humans as well? So every Thursday, which has turned into one of our busier nights, we do a trivia night, which is a lot of fun. Wednesday nights, we do a game called Survey Says, which is like trivia meets Family Feud survey style. So we give you a survey, you try to pick the top five answers, and you get points for all that. Saturdays is a kind of a rotation of different events. Last Saturday, we just had our Bar Olympics, which is one of our busier nights of the month. Teams compete in cornhole, dart, foot cup, and beer pong, and win a chance to get their picture taken with the Golden Pug Assist, which is our one of our trophies. And then you can win up to $50.
Wow.
This Saturday we have our beer pong tournament with Bondi Beer. And
what sparks Luai? Scanning the schedule, that kind of caught my eye just because it looked like it was a little bit different than some of the other things you've done.
Yeah, so we like to do games, and then we like to do parties. So the last Saturday, the 25th, we're doing a luau. So we're going to have, you know, wine-themed decorations, some music. We're going to have dogs kind of dress up in, you know, their Hawaiian outfit. We'll do some food, which is another thing we have at our dog bar that some don't, is our food is really, really good. So we're going to do some, you know, teriyaki Hawaiian style sliders and stuff like that. So, you know, we just like to make something interesting for people to come to and have fun. That's what we're all about.
That's great. So any given day, let's say Saturday, which I'm sure is probably one of your busier days, how many dogs / humans do you typically see when you look out any given part of the day or night?
Well, it can be anywhere from about 15 to 30.
Okay.
Our check-in system keeps track of how many dogs we have in throughout the day, though we don't check them out, so it's hard to say how many are in there in one given time.
Yeah.
But, I mean, on our busier days, we usually get up through 40 or so dogs throughout the day and can be upwards. I think the most we've had on like either our St. Paddy's Day party or our one-year anniversary, I think we had up to 80.
Wow.
Throughout the day.
That's a full house.
Same time, but just throughout the day.
Yeah, cool. And so any other special events on the horizon that you'd like to let us know about as a sneak preview of some kind?
No, I think our Barks Luau is going to be fine. It's the first one we're doing, so we're going to test it, see how it goes. And then next month we have our Bar Olympics on August 1st. Like I said, that is a lot of fun for a lot of people. And you don't have to drink in order to do all that.
It's not required.
It is not required. It is just all about having fun. So I have a few of my regulars that come with their dogs that don't drink, and they play with water.
Cool. All right. So we should, I guess, note that the website is barkstaphouse.com.
Yep.
And physical address in Largo is 14219 Walsingham Road. I believe that's in the Peach Plaza, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep. It's in Peach Plaza right on your way out to Indian Rocks Beach.
Okay, well, there you go. Well, this sounds cool, sounds fun if you're a dog, sounds fun if you're a dog person, or just if you're just a person on your own, even, as you say. It's not even required to have a dog, which is great.
Oh, yeah, I have a lot of regulars that don't bring dogs. They just come because they like to have fun.
That's great. Cool. All right, well, this sounds really cool. Well, thanks for joining us on Talking Animals, and good luck to you guys.
Thank you so much, Duncan. I really appreciate it.
Take care.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye. Coming up on WNF, it's The Conversation, the great show hosted by Mario Nunez and Joe King Carter. After that, it's The Scoop, WNF's brief news recap. Then we shift back to music programming with Sam Wall holding forth from 1 to 3, followed by Sally in for Nancy C on the traffic jam this afternoon from 3 to 6 p.m. So that's all coming up here on 88.5 WMNF. And we've just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals. So I invite you to join us next Wednesday for another edition of the show. And I also invite you to visit TalkingAnimals.net for audio archives of every show we've ever broadcast. Apple Podcasts are available there, too, as well as on other podcast platforms. Links to our social media can be found there as well. And you can subscribe to our newsletter to find out about our guests a couple of days beforehand and other news from the Talking Animals world. So I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weekiwachee, and beyond. Stay tuned for the conversation coming up shortly here on WMNF Tampa. Thanks.